For the folks who make a living in rural America, working and stewarding the land, the plans of an environmental nonprofit to create an American Serengeti in central Montana kind of feels like a swipe at their core values. Many of them have voiced their opposition to the American Prairie Reserve and also the government agencies that they believe is helping them through incomplete or inaccurate environmental reviews. With the backdrop of a public meeting in Malta organized by Attorney General Austin Knutson, we explore the issue of these differing visions of preservation on Voices of Montana. I need to set up a little bit here to go back before we can kind of go forward and look at what is going on today in our rural America. And I think the conflict is simply, if you want to get to the quick of it, it's two opposing visions for Montana. The one vision comes from Montanans. This is our rural America. We worked here. We sacrificed here. We are stewards of the land. We are about preservation. And then there's a group, the American Prairie Reserve, that they say we have a preservation vision as well to create this American Serengeti, and we are going to conserve. And we don't feel like rural America has done a good enough job. That's sort of a slap in the face. We have talked about it quite a bit here, and maybe I've lamented too often. But for me, it kind of sits deep that if we lose our rural America, and we're seeing that happen in a lot of places, I'd like to see it revitalized. That's happening in some areas, too. I think we lose touch with some of the values that we hold dear. And that we trace back to rural America. And a lot of that is the sacrifice for the land, the sacrifice for the family. And a lot of that is community-minded values. The APR is a nonprofit group, and it's funded by, Representative Dan Bartel, who is, House District 29. That's in central Montana. He had argued in an op-ed a while ago about they're funded essentially by taxpayers who foot the bill every time a nonprofit buys land legally, maybe not ethically, as some have claimed. And that's a reference to APR's tactics of calling newly widowed landowners. But I'm not sure that that's necessarily fair. I have not explored that aspect outside of the fact that I've heard and it's been reported that that's some of their tactics. But they buy this land legally, but the tax exemption for APR affords them a pretty good advantage in the marketplace when it comes to buying productive lands. And APR has amassed 420,000 acres of land in central Montana, very near their original goal of purchasing 500,000 acres as leverage to control 3.2 million acres of public land surrounding the CMR refuge. So they're well-funded, and I want to talk about some of this funding here, too. But I caught up with our Attorney General, Austin Knutson, yesterday and wanted to play that. We're going to cover a couple of different topics since we had our Attorney General on. But it starts out with this public meeting that they're facilitating in Malta today, and then it kind of goes on from there. Listen to some key arguments here, and I'll get to those a bit later on as well. And those key arguments include the precedents that this BLM decision may be setting and how that will could play out. Chuck Deneau, who's with United Property Owners of Montana, kind of lays that out in a recent editorial as well. And I'm going to go through that here in just a little bit. But let's first get to this interview with Attorney General Austin Knutson. And the first question I asked was essentially, you know, this the BLM has conducted these public hearings. Is this a public hearing? Is this unusual for the Attorney General's office to conduct a public hearing in this manner?
I guess I don't know if it's unusual or not, Tom. It seemed to us, with all the feedback we were getting, that a lot of the residents in the area felt like they were not being heard or not being given an opportunity to be heard. We heard that over and over and over. A lot of people reaching out to my office. So, you know, we just decided, hey, that's kind of up in my home country. Let's take a trip. Let's have a public hearing and let's let people talk.
Will these then be officially entered into the record regarding the BLM's finding here?
We're not going to do that for people. I mean, we don't think that's appropriate. We're definitely going to be showing people how to do that, where to go. We're going to try to create some opportunities for them to submit their own comments. But no, the intention here is not for my office to be an intermediary to BLM public comment.
Understood. You know, and it's my understanding, Austin, that the original language that set up these grazing allotments years and years ago were very specifically designated for livestock. Is there some legal precedence that's being set here?
I think this is a very dangerous legal precedent, whether you agree with it or not, and that really is the issue here. The 1934 Taylor Grazing Act stipulates that federal land, the preferred use, is for livestock grazing. We can have a discussion about whether that should be in federal law or not, but the fact is, right now, that's federal law, period. The BLM does not have the authority to simply snap its fingers and wave its magic wand and change this to some other designation. If APR wants that to be done, they need to go through the legislative process at the federal level. Taylor Grazing Act is the Taylor Grazing Act. It's federal law, and I think that's what's really the rub here, is that APR is pretty flagrantly asking the BLM to just ignore federal law and change these allotment uses from livestock grazing to some other designation. And from what we can see, there's no legal basis for doing so.
Yeah, and that sets up an avenue for certainly a lot of pushback there. Speaking of the pushback, summarize, what are the nature of some of the comments that you're getting on this?
Well, like I said, I mean, we've had a lot of people reach out and just say they really feel like that the BLM is going to dial this in. They've already made their decision. We kind of suspected that was probably the case, you know, frankly, as soon as Joe Biden took the presidency. They've kind of been telegraphing this. And with just some of the moves that the APR has made in that area. People really felt like they were not being heard. Anytime you've got Washington, D.C. dictating to rural Montana how rural Montana is going to be handled, that's going to create a rub, and we're hearing that from a lot of people in the area. So we really want to make sure that we've given these people an opportunity to be heard, and that's the whole point here.
Once again, that public meeting will be Wednesday tonight, September 15th, starting at 6 o'clock at the Malta High School. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule, sir, and thanks for the work you do, and be well.
Thanks. I appreciate it, Tom. You too.
Montana Attorney General Austin Knutson. Again, that was recorded yesterday. There is that public meeting, as mentioned, they're facilitating today in Malta. It starts at 6 o'clock at the Malta High School. We'll get back to this 1934 Taylor Grazing Act and the heart of the conflict here with APR's proposal to rewild 7 grazing permits there. Not a legal use of BLM land. APR would contend there is precedence for this. Vicki Olson's going to join us next, a longtime local ranching family member, president of the Public Lands Council. As we continue on here from Montana, for Montana, it's Voices of Montana.
There's something new driving work in our state. Safety. Safety is what's getting Montanans in all kinds of jobs back on the job and back to the rhythms and routines that help us thrive. Put simply, safety works here. That's what we stand for at Montana State Fund, making the workplace a safe one, wherever it happens to be. Find ways to put safety to work in your line of work at safemt.com.
All right, go back over this. Is this our rural America, or is this our American Sarah Getty? The conflict that continues between APR, United Property Owners of Montana, the plans for preservation, both groups want to preserve this area. The UPOM members, as well as just local ranching families, say, we've worked, we've sacrificed, we are original stewards of the land. We want to preserve this for production, for our families, to make our community stronger and better. And APR says, well, I don't want to put words in their mouth either, but essentially saying that they have a right to legally purchase this land and also to contend for variances in these 7 grazing allotments. Now, I'm going to talk with somebody here who's got a lot more background on it than I can express. And Vicki Olson, longtime local ranching family up in that central Montana, that Malta area where the public meeting is today. She's president of the Public Lands Council, member of the Montana Stock Growers Association, the Montana Farm Bureau, as well as Ranchers Stewardship Alliance. And good morning, Vicki. How's it going today?
Good morning. Very well, thank you. Another bright, shiny day here. I do want to say that my comments today are of mine personally, not necessarily of all the organizations that I belong to, just that I like to spread my learning ability out and go to several and
yeah.
participate in many organizations, because you can always learn something, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, I appreciate that community-mindedness. I'm not sure I set this up as well as I possibly could have. You know, who APR is, who United Property Owners of Montana are. We should go back to the FWP decision that was almost 2 years ago, and that was 10 years in the making, that UPOM challenged and won in court, that said bison, a free-roaming, and I'm summarizing here, Vicki, maybe you could do it better, but free-roaming bison in Montana would be allowed, according to the FWP. And then you've got this recent Bureau of Land Management decision here, finding of no significant impact to the APR's proposal that they would like to rewild 7 grazing allotments, totaling 57,000 acres of public land, from cattle grazing to open range for their bison. Precedent setting, do you think?
Very definitely is there, because bison are not listed in the Taylor Grazing Act or in the resource management plan that the BLM is supposed to abide by, and they are not listed as a permittable animal, and so this would have to be a special permit. And there are other bison permits out there, but those permits are for marketable animals and not as a conservation herd, and I think that's a very distinct element that maybe we've slid over, because this is conservation, and BLM is supposed to be administering these lands for the sustainability of the livestock industry so that we can feed the people of the United States, and that's, I think this goes against that entirely. And another thing, APR is the one that has written this proposal, and they're asking for a special permit because that's the only way bison can be permitted. And yet in parts they want bison / cattle. So they're not even going for one or the other. They're kind of wanting all of it. And so it's very unusual and very precedented that, you know, they want to just be able to do anything on their land. And that really bothers me.
Well, and they have contended too that they're doing this as private property owners. Of course, they're looking that their aim is, and they're near to it, 500,000 acres of private land that they have purchased. And again, they're well funded. I didn't get a chance to go into that. Maybe we can in just a bit too. But they would contend that there is precedence already for this. The environmental assessment from the BLM. What's your take? They're finding of no significant impact. In fact, they would state that it likely has a positive economic impact in the area.
Well, I don't agree with that, and a lot of that is because, I don't know if you've looked at the actual proposal, but APR wrote it, which is very unusual to start with. Normally, if there's a proposal, the BLM writes it, and so you have a very unusual circumstances there. And that land, that, as they wrote it, has put the a lot more value on the forage of those lands, and we think that it's very overstated on how much they can run, how many they can run. Instead of running less, they want to run more than like the rancher that had it before. And so there's a lot of things like that that haven't been looked at, I don't think, close enough in this analysis. And I think the BLM needs to step back and take, and we've pointed this out to them, that they didn't do a very good job of looking at the figures that was presented to them.
Well, and this is an environmental assessment, not and there's more to that. I got to take a news headline break, other stories to catch up on. We'll come on back because, as Chuck Deneau with UPOM has argued, APR could be the test case that environmentalists are watching closely, and we'll explain that in further detail. Well connected in the ranching and farming industry, or community, I should say. Vicki Olson is with us here. She does have a number of titles, president of the Public Lands Council, but speaking for herself here as we're talking about APR's proposal to rewild grazing allotments, seven of them in particular, but they pared down that proposal from, I think it was almost two dozen. Vicki, I'm going to read this. This comes from Chuck Deneau, as I mentioned, who's a spokesperson for the United Property Owners of Montana. If APR is successful in removing their allotments from agricultural production to use them for rewilding and ecotourism, a new precedent will be set that affects all BLM grazing. Here's the thing. That's me. We'll see a rush by deep-pocketed and taxpayer-subsidized nonprofits to buy a branch land in the West in order to take over BLM allotments with the intention of removing them from ag production. APR is the test case that many environmentalists are watching closely. Your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think that's very true. We know that APR has got big pockets to buy these lands, and they are also being, like you say, watched by other groups that also have big pockets, and they get very good tax advantages when they do buy these. And so looking at the big picture, I think that's definitely true. And that is definitely not what the Taylor Grazing Act was set out to be. And I think that, you know, BLM's decisions, if they want to change this, then it should have to go through the legislature and not just be a local or administrative decision. And I think that's an important part of this thing, is that it is not being legislated and changing the Taylor Grazing Act, which to me is law. And that's what they should have to abide by.
And that's one of the arguments that Attorney General Austin Knutson made in that conversation we had with him earlier on. We played that back for you. Talking about due process here, and this precedence where instead you just bypass the legislative process and just do things through the administrative or the executive branch, and that is not due process. The APR would argue, and I don't know how to say Pete's last name. Is it Geddes? Geddes?
Who?
Vice President Pete Geddes, Chief External Relations Officer for the American Prairie Reserve.
Oh, I don't know him.
He submitted also an op-ed, and my apologies for not getting that right, Pete. He said, as the EA describes, American Prairie's proposal offers economic benefits as well, and according to the EA, and that's the Environmental Assessment, implementation of the proposed change in use would result in a gain of the equivalent of four full-time jobs at the Phillips County level. Like other property owners, we are exercising our property rights that come with the purchase of the land. Your thoughts on that retort?
Well, I don't know. I don't think they have been increasing our population by any means, but they also use that we are keep going downhill in our population, but they went back to the way back when the settlement days to use for numbers, and yes, we are definitely down from that, but then the ranch I live on had 50 some homesteads on it, so we're definitely not going to sustain that, because that's just not possible in this rangeland. But the APR thinks that they're gaining in our communities, and yet if you go into the community of Malta, you will find that they do very little business in our area, and definitely are not helping our community. So that is their ad, not ours, and I contend that it's not true. We have been here for a very long time and brought these range back to excellent condition.
And that's the rub that I think we have to explore as we come on back with more. Vicki Olson here. We're looking at American rural values versus the American Serengeti.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today. I've dubbed it Two Visions of Preservation. This is Our Rural America versus This is Our American Serengeti. We are talking today about the APR's plans in central Montana to create a reserve totaling 3.2 million acres, most of that public lands. They have been gaining foothold since they began in 2001. They have a large and deep pockets. I don't know if I want to talk about the funding. I'll try to get that information out here. But welcome back, Tom Schultz from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana on the Northern News Network. Vicki Olson is with us here. She is from a local ranching family, has connections with a lot of the organizations that defend ranchers and promote our producers in the area. You know, Vicki, thanks again for being here. We've talked about precedent setting that, you know, this potential BLM environmental assessment decision could set going forward. What's the impact? What's the impact of the land? What are some of the other concerns that have united some of the property owners in that area regarding this?
Oh, there's several. One of them being the year-long grazing. We've got lots and lots of studies, university and otherwise, that show that that is not good for the range, and that all of that data has been expelled, and now that doesn't count when you go to bison, and I beg to differ with them because you can find their bison on the water holes just like you do the cattle. One of the things that I did want to note, and because our area is very well noted for the hunting and recreating in our area, and very little of our land is locked up and where people can't come in and ask for permission and go hunt private and BLM, very accessible. And that's something that the APR says they do. But their exterior fence is electrified quite highly. I mean, I had a guy the other day grab the fence and it actually knocked him on his butt. Yeah. It was that big a shock. And those exterior fences, they have redone and eliminated a lot of the gates, so it is really inhibiting the ability of, like, say, hunters coming along there. Guy drove by the other day, he drove for 17 miles along their fence and found three gates.
17 miles, three gates in 17 miles.
Yep, and that's the only way, you know, with the electric fence that they can get through. In their previous permit, they were supposed to build crossovers, you know, fence things that you can walk over and stuff. They didn't do that, and they've been in, like you say, been doing this since 2000, and that never did get done. Well, it's also in the new proposal, so will it get done? Probably not. But it's inhibiting, like I say, the local hunters or people that come in, because we get a lot of out of area hunters also. They can't go from one piece of BLM to their piece of BLM because of these exterior fences that are so highly electrified. And those fences also are inhibiting the migration. We had a new study out, which of course is not included in this. They did not see fit to do this new include the new study on how it is stopping the migration of the antelope and a lot of the elk, and the corridor that goes south from my place through there. And so I think a lot of the data has not been included. They go, oh, it's standard BLM fence. Well, that's not standard BLM fence, because most BLM fence, you have at least one gate every mile. And as you can see with, like I said, he drove 17 miles and found three gates in that entire area. Plus, they had also plowed a new road on the BLM. And as far as I know, they did not do any of the ecological or, like, looking for birds or artifacts. I was told it was plowed right through teepee rings, et cetera, et cetera. And I have not seen the paperwork that allowed them to do that. And if I did that, I'd be in big trouble.
Well, and I think that's part of the rub here, is that APR is asking for concessions that would never be granted the local producers. But they're trying to go about it, at least through the legal means. What do you make of this recent court decision that pulled back at least on the FWP's environmental impact statement?
Well, that was a very good one, and I think because of state law, you know, you're not supposed to allow it on private land unless consent in the state of Montana. So in other words, if bison are released, if they're on my private land, that's illegal in the state of Montana, and I was really glad to see you challenge that, and they learned a lot about what was going on that probably shouldn't have been, and I really commend UPump for finding out all of that and getting that stopped, because that will have a significant effect on local ranchers.
How much of this plays, how much of the fact that there's a lot of money coming in, a lot of it from foreign billionaires? You look at John and Adrian Mars, the confectionery company Mars. They've contributed more than $20 million to the project. There's a family called the Enricos. They created DreamWorks. They've committed more than $10 million to this. A Swiss family has a billionaire who now lives in the United States. They're funding, and they probably, the last I had here, I got a report from maybe it was like 3-4 years ago. Since 2001, they've collected nearly $72 million. That might be, I don't know, up to about $90 million. How much of this is the fact that you've got foreign billionaires coming in with global visions and throwing their weight around?
Well, they have global visions, and then they're also being fed the line that they're creating a legacy, and this is something they can brag about and claim forever. That they're creating this huge legacy of a Serengeti, and it's an ego thing for the rich and famous. Let's be real.
Will that compromise rural America and our rural values?
Oh, I think so. I mean, if you don't have ranching families out here, little towns like Malta and other ones will be wiped off the map. I mean, we just can't sustain without agriculture. And they're the ones that are in there buying groceries and tires and all of the things that we do every day. And I think it will very definitely change, and not just Malta, but as you know, they've bought in Southern Valley and south of the river, so it will affect a lot of small communities that provide a lot of things to the state of Montana.
And I share
number one industry, agriculture.
I share some of those same concerns about losing rural America. We're losing some values that we hold dear. But that's a pretty broad statement that is going to happen.
Oh, it is. But we've seen it because they, like I said, they didn't get the warmest welcome in Malta, and so they do not do business here. They get their workers in from other places and stuff. Very little work is done for the APR from the local people of our community. And I know that for a fact because I am close to the subject. But we need the local little communities because, like, for me, I mean, it's 30 miles to Malta, but if I have to go to a bigger hospital or whatever, it's 120 miles to Havre or 250 to Billings, you know. And we need the small communities so that I can stop in Malta if I have a medical emergency or whatever. And those are the kind of things that we will lose.
Let's just shift gears slightly on that to what preserves rural America. What reignites rural America? What else do we need to do to preserve the farming and the ranching, not only the heritage, but the important food production that comes out of rural America?
Well, that's a very good question. I wish I had the answer. But I know in our area, there has been a lot of next generation kids come back to the ranches and farms. And, of course, now with our economy the way it is, it's making it really difficult. As we all say, ranching in Montana right now is not the easiest thing in the world, but there has been a lot of ranching and farming families that have come back and are raising their kids. Malta is a good example of that. I look around at, you know, the kids coming into the kindergarten and that kind of stuff, and I just hope that can continue, because those are very important things. And if you look at big corporations, they'll hire a ranch kid over a city kid almost any day because of the work ethic, and I think that has a lot to do with it. My son worked in New York State for a while, and they said, oh, we'll hire a ranching kid over anybody else in a heartbeat. all the way back in upstate New York.
I just believe that instinctively, and I think it's pretty self-evident. Vicki Olson, longtime local ranching family in that Malta area, also connected with a lot of the organizations that support farming and ranching. So this public meeting tonight, now, did the BLM come to Malta? I know they've held public comment meetings in various places. I believe Lewistown, and it's another sort of hotbed of conflict there. Did they come to Malta? Why this public meeting tonight through the Attorney General's office?
Well, I want to commend the Attorney General for bringing this up and to the forefront, and to let the BLM know that Montana is watching and want it done right. And yes, the meeting tonight, and I hope we fill the auditorium, because people need to look at it. And with this, they're making it easy for you to make your comments and make your voices heard. And I hope there are a lot of people will come out. And I mean, I'm not saying you have to say this or that or the other thing. Let your voice be heard. And that's what I think that the Attorney General is trying to do, is let people of the area and stuff, because the BLM did not host a meeting on this here. So that, I mean, if they held a public meeting, you could have been, okay, why is this way on this? Because, like I said, we think a lot of the AUMs that they figured on the private land is way over exaggerated, and it's going to create overgrazing. And if they'd held a public meeting, that would have been something that we could have asked them publicly.
And this is where this environmental assessment will probably fall short, and likely, I don't know, we've talked with members of the Montana Stock Growers Association. Right now, you've got to kind of play it out a little bit, whether they are going to bring lawsuit and at least push for an environmental impact statement. But that would be one area where a full EIS would disclose, right?
I would certainly hope so, yes, because people that were more used to writing EISs instead, I mean, EAs, they don't write a lot of EAs and know exactly what to write is what I kind of, my take on it is. But, yes, and it isn't just the stock growers that is looking at that. I think several of our organizations have already engaged lawyers for their advice and guidance and stuff for going forward with this, because we think that there are several places where it does violate and should be changed.
The public comment period ends on the 26th, is that correct?
28th, I think.
28th, okay. So how can people comment outside of this meeting tonight in Malta at 6 o'clock?
Oh, you can go onto their website. There's a pretty easy way to hit, you know, it says comment on EAs, and or contact Montana Stock Growers or Public Lands Council. All of that information is there. Contact, I mean, if you want to just call them, they'll send you the site. Or, like I say, tonight I'm sure that the Attorney General will have hard copy forms that you can just write on. And if that's what you want me to send you one, certainly do that. We'll make it to anybody that wants to comment, because and help you, even if you are not electronically knowledgeable or expert, which some of us are not as good as others with that. But certainly want to help anybody who wants to write a comment to have that access.
It's a good way to put it. I want to thank the farmers and ranchers for putting food on the table. I want to thank you for being engaged in this, Vicki. Thanks for the work. We'll catch up with you later, okay?
Okay. Thank you.